terrorists declare war on the United States.
Military officials here at the Pentagon are confirming that seven are dead. At
least. Armored vehicle stands guard.
Downtown New York in chaos.
The 7.0 quake was centered roughly 10 miles from the capital city.
We want the public to feel safe.
Thousands likely dead.
The world seems so unstable, so insecure. Everything is changing way too fast. But there are some things that are steadfast. Things that never change. God and His Word. Join Pastor Randy Reams as he shares truths from God's unchanging Word.
So we're in Joshua chapter 22. Joshua chapter 22. All right, we spent a couple, 2-3 weeks in chapter 20 and 21. So Joshua chapter 22, verses 1 through 16 and verse 28. Is that what we read today? Now notice the title of this sermon, Assumptions About Ed. And I know you know exactly what that means, right? So when you're there, please stand. It is our tradition, just out of honor for God's word, to stand as we read it. Joshua chapter 22, 1 through 16 and verse 28. It's a little lengthy, but I didn't know where I could cut the story off for you and you still get it. Then Joshua summoned the Reubenites and the Gadites and the half-tribe of Manasseh and said to them, "You have kept all that Moses, the servant of the Lord, commanded you, and you have listened to my voice and all that I commanded you. You have not forsaken your brothers. These many days to this day, you have kept the charge of the commandment of the Lord your God." Now, this, remember, these three tribes wanted the land east of the Jordan. And Joshua said, if you'll go fight with us west of the Jordan and be faithful to that till the end, and that's what he's talking about there. Now the Lord God has given rest to your brothers as he spoke to them. Therefore, turn now and go to your tents, to the land of your possession, which Moses, the servant of the Lord, gave you beyond the Jordan. Only be careful to observe the commandment and the law which Moses, the servant of the Lord, commanded you. That's vital to this story. And to love the Lord your God and walk in all his ways and keep his commandments and hold fast to him and serve him with all your heart and with all your soul. So Joshua blessed them and sent them away, and they went to their tents. Now the half-tribe of Manasseh, Moses had given a possession in Bashan, and we'll talk about that. But to the other half, Joshua gave a possession westward beyond the Jordan. So the Manasseh split on both sides. So when Joshua sent them away to their tents, he blessed them and said to them, "Return to your tents with great riches and with very much livestock, gold, silver, bronze, iron, and very many clothes. Divide the spoil among your divide the spoil from your enemies with your brothers. The sons of Reuben, the sons of Gad, the half-tribe of Manasseh, returned their home, departed from the sons of Israel at Shiloh," we talked about that before, "which is in the land according to the command of the Lord of Moses." Now, they then came to the region of the Jordan, which is in the land of Canaan, and the sons of Reuben, the sons of Gad, the half-tribe of Manasseh, built an altar there by the Jordan, an altar large in appearance. And the sons of Israel heard it and said, "Behold, the sons of Reuben, the sons of Gad, the half-tribe of Manasseh, have built an altar at the frontier of the land of Canaan, in the region of the Jordan, on the side belonging to the sons of Israel." When the sons of Israel heard it, the whole congregation and the sons of Israel gathered themselves at Shiloh to go against them in war. When the sons of Israel sent to the sons of Reuben, to the sons of Gad, the sons of tribe of Manasseh, in the land of Gilead, Phinehas, the son of Eleazar, the priest, and with him 10 chiefs, one chief from each of his father's household, from each of the tribes of Israel. Each one of them was ahead of his father's household among the thousands of Israel. And they came to the sons of Reuben, to the sons of Gad, the sons of half-tribe of Manasseh, at the land of Gilead, and they spoke to them, saying, "Thus says the whole congregation of the Lord, what is this unlawful act which you have committed against God, the God of Israel, turning away from following the Lord this day by building yourselves an altar to rebel against the Lord this day?" Verse 28. "Therefore they," that is those three tribes, their representatives, "it shall also come about if they say, this to us or to our generation in the time to come. Then they shall say, see the copy of the altar of the Lord, which our fathers made, not for burnt offerings and sacrifices, rather to be an ed. The word witness in the Hebrew is the word ed. That's the title, okay? A witness before us and you, you may be seated. So you wondered where I got assumptions about ed. The Hebrew word there for witness is ed, okay? Remember Mr. Ed? Are any of you old enough like me to remember Mr. Ed? I'm sorry, that just came to my mind. I chased a squirrel there. So the basic essence is this. We've talked about that. We have the division of the tribes, as we talked about before. They've divided up the tribes. In general, there's peace. Then each tribe had to go to their section and sort of get more control, specific control, over their territory. All right? So Manasseh, Gad, or half-tribe of Manasseh, Gad, and Reuben, had Moses had promised them that they could have the eastern side of the Jordan as long as they went over and helped the western side do the conquering. Now the land's divided. They all meet up at Shiloh. We talked to that before. That's where the tabernacle is now in this part of the story. And so these guys, Joshua's sending them off to bless them and said, obey the command that Moses gave you when you go over there. And then they get there. So you have these people as a group. I mean, their desires to obey God, to live for Him. I mean, they're sort of excited that God has brought them into the promised land now. The promise is being fulfilled. They now have their own homes instead of tents like they've been doing for 40 years. These people fought together, lived together, ate together, went through the whole experience together. And now that they're at the point of killing each other, nothing like family, huh? Really? This is a family fight, and there ain't nothing like a family fight. So, we want to figure out what creates this divide. We see that these guys built this large altar. So what's the big deal? What brings it to this point? And then what things can we draw out of it? Now, I'm going to be honest, this isn't a deep theology chapter. It's a very practical one, and I know usually on Sundays I bring some theological idea in the construct, and that's, to be honest, I think I might have to mistreat the passage a little bit. It's about a very practical thing, getting along with folks. So, So here's what we're talking. This is a satellite image, and the reason I show this to you is about up here Syria starts. All this other land right out here is now today Jordan. So this is the land we're talking about that these tribes are moving into. And I'll show you more about that. Here these guys are. They're leaving Shiloh, and they come to this place. What causes them to build this altar over here? Okay? I'm going to show you a couple things. For one, you're dropping... The highest point's 2,000 feet, but this is where I can... Best picture I can come up with in a place where I can give you the stuff. But that's 1,300 feet. So how many of you ever drove over the Blues? You know what I'm saying? Going towards Pendleton? And you can just see that valley, right? You recognize this. There's a big barrier behind me when you're coming down that hill. So these guys, of course, they're doing it walking. Now, they did have wheels during the Bronze Age, but we don't see any signs of Israel having chariots or anything at the time. You're coming down into this valley, and you're recognizing this. There is a massive barrier between us and the rest of the Israelites. Come on. All right. So up towards the northern end of this, where right at the edge of Syria and Jordan today, this is some of the terrain you'll see. This is the Yarmouk River. How many of you have been to Snake River Canyon? Yeah, live there. Not only do they have this barrier, but what they're moving into, the land itself, the barriers that protects Israel, they're on the other side of. And they're having to live in this type of terrain. Okay, and that bridge down there was blown up in one of the Israeli wars. Okay, this is what's called the King's Highway on the Jordan, just to work your way down into those valleys. Imagine going on that by foot, carrying your stuff. Then we get to the central valley, the Jordan Valley. Come on. There you go. Home sweet home. Now, I don't know about you, but I like some trees at least. Okay. And, you know, we've been in our house 20-something years. We got mature trees now. We sort of like that. But I'm looking out there going, honey, you ain't going seeing the relatives because it's too far. You know what I mean? You know, maybe you'll see them on Yom Kippur. They didn't have Hanukkah then. And this, which I've shown you before, this is the area a little further down now, getting towards the Reubenites, is Jericho, where Jericho just sits over to the left here. I don't know about you, but that doesn't look that inviting to me. I'm not sure why these guys ask for this. Perhaps when they asked, they thought they wouldn't have to cross over and fight the other guys, because nobody lives there. Wait until you see the next one. We get down to Reuben, which you're now getting down to the Dead Sea, just east of the Dead Sea, okay? That's in the wrong place. That's Gad, that goes up. No, that should be Reuben. Okay, that's actually a part of Reuben's territory, okay? So forgive me for labeling that incorrectly. But you can see that canyon. This particular is called Wadi Rum in Jordan. These three dots are trucks. Yeah. What a valley. What a place to live in. The movie Martian was filmed there. If you've seen it, it's so foreign to us. They filmed the movie Martian there. This is the land that these three tribes are going into. They get out there on the edge of nowhere and go, y'all reckon? We're out here by ourselves. So they decide to build this altar. Now, the altar itself is on the western side. Okay, they begin to get this altar that's there. We got the idea? Now, I remember when Kim and I first got married, I packed her up and moved her. Now, she had never left home, never moved away. Her family still lives in the same place, in the same house. And so I remember that move away. All right? And that was hard for her. But one thing that's really odd is after I got out of college, that first time, we went to help plant a church down in Arizona. That was a whole nother story. Even for me to pack up and leave to that far away, and then if you've been to Arizona, it doesn't look much like Western Washington. And then beyond that, we were going to a little town, same type of thing, when you get to this one town and you look to the left where you go up to this top of this plateau at 2,000 feet higher, you're going, we're going up there. How do we get there? The government had cut a road. By the time you get at the top, it's 7.5% grade to get up on the top of this plateau. And you can see all the way to Phoenix, 75 miles away. So for me, I try to put these stories in a personal context. That move was difficult. Plus, the terrain was foreign and unique. It's a place where God took boulders the size of this room and stacked them on top of each other in this town. A lot of New Age type stuff there. There was, for the size of town it was, a high percentage of homosexual couples that lived in this town. And so I can sort of relate to this idea and take in your family to some place and you realize we're this far away from everybody we know. Any support system, we're out here. No calling grandma to babysit. I would die. Because we get the babysit. So they're in this. The valley itself at some point is 13 miles wide. Realizing if you're walking by foot at 3 miles an hour, that's a long walk. Okay? So they come to this region and they're feeling somewhat alienated from the rest of Israel and build this altar. Now, and it says, the sons of Israel heard it said. Here's how we do it today. I made this. This isn't a real Facebook page. I made this. I don't know if you could see it, but it's the Facebook page of Ebenezer Ben Zara. And over here, you can see he's Shortcuts or the Promised Land Real Estate and Goshen's Kosher Deli, because it had to be kosher, right? So here's the story he posts on his Facebook. I'm putting this in context today. Here's the story. A rebellious Reuben, Gad, and Manasseh build altar. Will it bring God's wrath on Israel? And Ebenezer up here posted, have you heard about this? Share if you think this is deplorable. All Israel now heard about it. Now, let's get real. In those days, they didn't have Facebook, all right? But I just made this to try to make it maybe to us today, okay? We don't necessarily go by camel to the next town or donkey to the next town and share the news. There's no town crier, all right? But there's Facebook. And if you don't think news carries by Facebook, just go out there and look what's out there after the inauguration. And you got everybody's opinion. Have you heard? Did you know? That kind of thing. So they build this altar. Israel heard. They didn't see. They heard. Okay? Today, though, there's a picture on Facebook, so it's got to be true. Right? Because there's a photograph with it. There's a photograph there of the altar. It's got to be true. And the sons of Israel gathered themselves. Well, it says Israel heard of it. Then it says the whole congregation of the sons of it. So it didn't just Israel, the officials. Okay? That's what that implies, is those at the top. But then the whole congregation, the average Joe, the sheep herder, you know, the coppersmith, they all begin to hear about it, and they can't believe it. These guys have built an altar that isn't the one at the tabernacle. And remember, Joshua says, if you go over there, guys, you got to obey all the rules. And the first thing they do, can you believe it, is they break the rules. These guys spent 7 years fighting together against an enemy. And one event turns them on each other. Wow. And these are religious folks. The mob mentality kicks in. We didn't see any of that in last weekend. It was last week, did we? Mob mentality. The Western tribes then send these delegates. Now, they're not the heads of the family, but sons of each other, the heads of the family. Send delegates to go do to speak to these guys. And what do? They go a-preaching and accusing, okay? Criticizing them, telling them they've wandered away from God. The whole congregation of the Lord asked this, what is this unlawful act in which you have committed against the Lord? Notice they come with accusation first. That's always a good method, say sarcastically. Then they go in this little sermon. Remember Peor, what happened to Israel there when a guy disobeyed? I mean, remember, they talk about Achan. Remember when one guy took stuff from Jericho, it cost us all. So they start quoting Bible at them. What God has done, they shoot first, ask questions later. Because the Church of Christ never does that. This isn't relevant to us, okay? And many of you probably heard this story because it's been around a long time. The lady at the airport, she's waiting for her flight. She buys a bag of cookies. She sits down on the bench. She's sort of looking around there after a while, and then she reaches over and takes a bag of, or a cookie out of her bag. This guy next to her looks at her. He reaches into the bag and takes a cookie. She's thinking, maybe you just made a mistake. So she, as she finishes cookies, reaches in. For every cookie she takes, he takes one. The gall of this guy, she's thinking, that he would sit here and take my cookies right in front of me. Gets down to the last cookie, and he reaches and pulls it out. Breaks it in half, gives her half. Okay. He's the other half. She can't, but she's so happy when they call her flight because she's about ready to blow her top. She gets on the airplane. She sits down in her seat frustrated. She reaches in her bag to get her book out to read, and there's a bag of cookies. Assumptions. I know it's never happened in your house. Honey, where'd you put my... I didn't do anything. You must have. I didn't do anything with it. And then you find it in your pocket, your purse, your coat, whatever. I'm sure that's never happened in your house. Okay? The thing is, the one thing they do is they don't make an assumption about an action. The action was clear. There's an altar. Once the delegates get there, there's no... What they assume, what they want to talk about is intent. They assume a particular intent upon the action. That'll get you in trouble in marriage, just let you know. One thing I learned to say is, what do you mean by that? Because what you assume they mean, their intent, isn't necessarily what they mean. Okay? So, they insisted that the rules had been broken without getting any of the facts. So, and another story, the reason I tell these stories is because I'm going to be honest, we sit in church a long time, we've heard stories over and over again, but if you tell another little story that brings it home, people tend to remember it. So a student nurse is told by the head nurse to go to a particular room and check this person out. The person in that room's leaving the hospital. So she gets into the room, and there's a man fully dressed now, in front of him a suitcase. She pulls in with the wheelchair and says, "Excuse me, sir, you need to get in the wheelchair." "What do I got to get in the wheelchair for?" "Well, you need to get the wheelchair so I can take you, so you can leave the hospital. I mean, I don't want to get in. Why do I need?" And she explains to him the rules. We've all been there, right? You can't leave the hospital and not be in a wheelchair. "Okay," says the fellow, gets in the wheelchair, suitcase, gets to the elevator. They're in the elevator going downstairs. And the nurse says to the fellow, "Is your wife meeting you downstairs?" He goes, "I don't know. She's on the upstairs changing out of her robe." See, the lady was so insistent on the rules, she wasn't taking the time to find out the situation. That never happens in the body of Christ, right? Okay. Like I said, this message isn't deep in theology. It's very practical. And now, that story is fictional, but let me give you a real true one. And I won't give names or places for obvious reasons, but I was on staff at a church, and the senior pastor's wife got cancer. So they went over to that region's cancer institute, and she was being treated. This is like her second time being treated. And while there, the pastor, the husband, comes downstairs to get some lunch in the cafeteria. There, sees an old friend. They sit down, and they're eating lunch together. It happens to be a female. Honest truth, I was on staff there. Before they get back home from that trip, here's the story. Pastor's already got a woman to replace pastor's wife. "I'm going to be straight. That's why if I go to lunch with you and your wife, fella, and you get up and go to the restroom, I'm gone. I'm either making a phone call, following you to the restroom to wash my hands. Don't think I'm weird. But I've learned from a little bit of experience here. I know people. So I'm not sitting there with your wife, even though you're in the other room. People don't know that." So, you know what I'm saying? So that's just one of the things, the way I live by, you might think I'm legalistic or whatever. We often assume the worst possible motive when we see certain things. A study out of Psychological Science, July in 2006, talked about a study done by Princeton psychologist Janie Willis and Alexander Tudov. And I tell you that, not like you care, but I do that to show I'm not making this stuff up. I can give you a website where you can go look at the study. But what they discovered is, and regarding attractiveness, likability, competence, trustworthiness, whether it's an aggressive person or a kind person, our mind decides that, you ready? In 100 milliseconds. That's 1/10 of a second. And the longer they studied the pictures of faces, all it did was reinforce their first assumption. Never changed their mind because they sat there and studied, looked at the person longer. So we have this natural tendency, I trust that guy. Why? I don't like his eyes. We say stuff like that. So we have that natural tendency we have to overcome. But these people, they weren't strangers. They weren't just pictures of strangers. They had history with these people. This conflict is in the context of relationships. Okay? And so whether it's a stranger or that close family member, even your spouse, even we have a difficulty we often make. Why? I know why they did. They didn't come to Thanksgiving. You know why? Because last Thanksgiving, I happened to talk about, I wouldn't loan them that money when that's why they weren't coming. That's why they don't. You don't know that. Now, sometimes they might tell you, "I ain't coming because you didn't give me any money last year." Whatever. But we often make these assumptions. Okay? We hear it this way. When someone leaves a church, it don't take long before there's 12 reasons why they think that person left the church. Or why did that particular staff person, ministry person, step down from ministry? What do you think happened? And recently in our area, there was a pastor recently, a while back, I won't say when because I don't want to make connections, stepped down out of ministry, said he was going to do other ministry. And just recently it was revealed that he had had an affair. So I do understand that stuff happens. I'm not trying to be blind. Now people are asking this. Well, when he stepped down, is it because of that? Well, wait a minute. He stepped down here. They tell about his affair here. That does not necessarily mean that when he stepped down, he was lying about what he was doing, right? But I won't tell you where, but you can go on and read people blogging about it and talking about it, okay? And so me, when I first heard about it, I'm going to be direct, I go, I don't believe it. I just choose not to. And then somebody within that, I'll call it denominational group, that I happen to be friends with, I saw, and I said, man, I don't want to believe this. All I need to know this, true or not true, true. And I said, that's all I need to know. Somebody that's connected, very connected with this, okay? But we often want to talk about these things, okay? Even if we don't verbally say things, we have the tendency to draw conclusions. We just do. Did you see Mr. and Mrs.? They haven't been in church in 3 weeks. That's all you say, but your mind's going, wonder what's the matter. Your mind goes there and you begin to think things. Hopefully, here's what you're thinking. I need to call up on them. I hope they're well. Hopefully, that's where your mind goes. Problem is this. Let's get real. We don't know the story, the whole story of most people's lives. Even people we may know well. Somebody you work next to every day. Somebody you sit in church with and worship every day. You usually don't know that because it's going to be on steel. The real stuff that deep down moves people to poor decisions, you probably don't know. You don't know what they went through in life and those things that are, I'll say this, fogging their choices.
This is Pastor Randy Reams of Kindred Bible Church in Nampa, Idaho. I want to thank you for joining us today for Truths from God's Unchanging Word. This broadcast is an outreach ministry of Kindred Bible Church. I'd like to invite you also to visit our website, kindredbible.org. There you can listen to today's broadcast as well as previous broadcasts. If you're being ministered to by the broadcast, I'd like to encourage you to let us know. You can email us at info@kindredbible.org, or you can write to us at Kindred Bible Church, P.O. Box 32, Nampa, Idaho, 83653. And I'd like you also to check us out on Facebook. Look at us over there and give us a like. So again, I want to thank you for listening to Truths from God's Unchanging Word.